Okay. We are holding on the first line of the wide lines on Zayin Amud Aleph. We learned yesterday, Rav Huna had, we quoted Rav Huna had said, Rav Huna Amar Rav said that Beitza imitzi asan digmeres, that an egg is completed when it actually leaves the chicken. And we discussed, what does that mean? Is it as far as the dinim of, is it as far as the dinim of Bas v'Chalav? Is it, what, that's fine. Was it as far as the dinim? Was it as far as the dinim of Yomtiv? Was it as far as Basav Cholov? And then we said we ended up saying that it's relevant as far as Memkar, as far as buying and selling. That if you buy only eggs that have actually been laid by the chicken are going to be fertile. So therefore, if you want to buy eggs in order to hatch them, and you, instead you sold eggs that were not laid but were found inside the chicken when it was tested, then you can demand a refund. So now the Gemara says, "V'boisema," or here is another possibility: "Ma'im tiyasa nigmara." What does it mean when Rav Huna says that the egg is completed when it's laid? Means imitiyas ruba nigmara. It's considered to be completely laid when most of it has come out. Which means that this is relevant to Hilchos Yom Tov after all. V'chidur Rav Yechanan, and this would be like what Rav Yechanan says. The Amr Rav Yechanan, "Beitza shiyasa ruba me'erav Yom Tov," an egg that exited the chicken, most of it exited the chicken on Erev Yom Tov, v'chazra, and then it went back in. Sometimes, you know, muscular contractions will pull it back in. Muteras la'uchla b'Yom Tov, then when it's laid again on Yom Tov, then you're allowed to eat it. Since most of it came out already, it's considered as if it was laid. So that would be what he means. Imitiyasa nigmeres means that once most of it is out, then it's considered as if it's laid already. V'ikadama, or others say the other way around. Ma'imitiyasa nigmeres, on the contrary, if kula nigmeres, it means only, according to Rav Huna, only when it completely comes out of the chicken is it considered complete. Imitzias kula ein avarubaloi, which would mean only when the whole thing comes out, not most of it. Ola puk, Rav Yechanan. And according to this version, then, on the contrary, Rav Huna is telling us not like Rav Yechanan. Rav Yechanan would say that even though most of it came out already, it's enough. They would be saying that, no, dafka has to be the whole thing. So the bottom line is we have two ways, and within one way we have two possible ways of explaining what Rav Huna meant by this beitza imitzias nigmeres. One is that it's not relevant to Hilchos Yom Tov, but rather it's relevant to the halachos of buying and selling. And one is that it is relevant to the halachos of Yom Tov, and then what he means exactly, whether he agrees with Rav Yechanan or whether he disagrees, is up for debate. Gupa. Getting back to what we said, we quoted the Braithi yesterday. So if a person shechts a hen and finds eggs in it that are completed, you're allowed to eat them with milk. And we mentioned yesterday, Rashi says that this means even if only the yolk is finished, even though there's no white and no shell yet. Tosfos talks about that it means that it actually has to have a white also. And then there's the Shach in Yerdeya brings that there's other opinions that say that it actually has to have a hard shell as well, so it has to be really really complete. And then I think he mentions that actually the minug is that the minug nowadays is that if you find eggs inside a shechted chicken, you always consider them fleishiks even if they are 100% complete, and therefore you don't eat them with milk, but on the other hand, you also don't salt them together with the meat because they don't have blood in them. If you salt them together with the meat, they may absorb blood from the meat. That's a different issue the Taz talks about. So therefore, you do have to salt them, but you salt them separately. Yeah.
The meat of the chicken.
Right. Anyway. So, Rabbi Yaakov, but then the Braita continues, Rabbi Yaakov, if they were surrounded by gidim, by veins, asuris, then they're author. Meaning, in other words, what we don't actually mean like there are loose veins wrapped around it or something like around a tree. What we mean is when an egg is developing, then you see it looks like the surface of it looks like it's covered with veins because it needs a blood supply while it's growing. That's what we mean. It looks like it's covered with veins. So then Rabbi Yaakov says at that point it's still also to eat it with milk. Who is the Tana who says the following braisa? If a person eats from a dead kosher bird. Now, the din is there's a unique kind of tuma that applies to nivlas oif tahar, that applies to the nevela of a kosher bird, meaning a one that wasn't shechted properly.
Nevela of a kosher bird.
The nevela of a kosher bird, exactly what it sounds like, a kosher bird that wasn't shechted properly. It could be, for example, you know, it just died and it died in an accident or something. It could be it was shechted, but the shechita didn't go right. It could be even that, you know, it could be, for example, a case where melika was done on it, like they do for karbanos in the mitzvah, but it wasn't a proper carbon for whatever reason. Whatever the case, it's a nevela. With any other kind of tamei food, with any other kind of tshefa food, eating it, minat Torah, does not make you tamei. Midrabanan is a concept that when you eat tamei food, you become tamei. We learned about it in Shabbos. But minat Torah, there's no such thing. On the other hand, touching a dead kosher bird, a nevela of an osh tahar, does not make you tamei. If you just touch it. But there is a unique thing that the Torah says that if a person eats the nevela of a kosher bird, then it makes him tamei. It makes him tamei bebeis ablia when it hits the back of his throat when he's about to swallow it.
And if a trefa bird,
then it's not. It's only an osh tahar. There's a pasuk in Parshas Akrimos that goes something like this: "Va'nefesh ashtechol nevelo treifa." Yes, this week's parsha. "Va'nefesh ashtechol nevelo treifa be'ezra chobager." Then it becomes tamei. So what does nevelo treifa mean? So Rashi says on the pasuk over there, based on a Gemara in Chulin and other places, that it's talking about this case of nivlas oif tahar. So now, if a person eats from this nevelo of an oif tahar, but he doesn't eat the regular meat of it. He eats minashalal shalbeitim. He eats from the collection of eggs. Rashi says that shalal over here means that they're still kvuin bashedra. They're still attached to the ovaries, which in turn are attached to the spine of the chicken. And they still have the gidim. They still have the veins on their surface. That's called shalal shalbeitim. Okay, so you have like this. We're going to distinguish in a second between the shalol shalbeitim and the eshkol shalbeitim. Eshkol shalbeitim is the ovaries of the chicken. They're called an eshkol because they look like it. They look like a cluster. They look like a cluster. If you look over here, the Steinbach Gemara over here has illustrations of both of them, what the shalol shalbeitim is and what the eshkol shalbeitim is. The shalol shalbeitim is that. You have a bunch of eggs. We were talking about the other day that eggs develop in a chicken. A bunch of them are developing at a time. You have one of them is about to be laid. The next one is a day older. The next one, that's why a chicken usually lays eggs once a day. So you have the shalol shalbeitim and the whole collection of them. Some of them are fully developed. Some of them less so. Some of them still have the veins around them, etc. That's the shalol shalbeitim. And then the eshkol shalbeitim, which we'll talk about in a minute, is the actual ovaries themselves that the eggs first start developing inside.
So that's the upper part.
No. So the shalol shalbeitim means the eggs themselves that develop inside the ovaries.
Right.
And the eshkol shalbeitim is the ovaries themselves.
So that's what holds the eggs.
So that's what the eggs start developing inside, right?
So there's several ovaries things
in there.
And so each one of those has quite a few eggs in it?
That, I guess so. I don't know. I've never dissected a chicken, but I guess based on the picture over here,
I suppose so,
yeah.
Is the ovaries themselves.
Right. So now, but wait, we're not up to that yet. Right now we're up to shalol shalbeitim, which means, again, this cluster of eggs, some of which are more developed and others less so. Or min hatzomer, somebody eats from this nivlas oif tahar from the bones, or min hagidin, or from the sinews, or min habasah shenitlash min hachai, or from meat from such a bird that was pulled off while the bird was still alive. Tahar, in all those cases, he'll be tahar, because if it was torn off while the bird was still alive, then it's not nivlas oif tahar, because it's not nevela. The difference is doing minachai, but it's not nevela. It doesn't make him tamei. And the other thing is the shalol shalbeitim and the cluster of eggs and the bones and the gidim are not considered real. They're not considered real food. They're not considered part of the nevela. On the other hand, mina eshkol shalbeitim. But if somebody eats, if somebody eats from the cluster of eggs, which again means not the eggs themselves, but it means the ovaries, which is an actual part of meat from the chicken.
The ovaries are actual meat.
Yeah. Minakukuva. Yeah, it's possible to eat that. I don't know that anybody does nowadays, but in principle you could. Minakukuva, or from the pupik, from the gizzard, or from the ayin, or from the intestines. Even though now all of those things are not things people would. But they are edible. They are normally edible. So if a person eats any of those things, or he melted down the fat of the chicken, ugmoy, and he swallowed it down, tamei, in all those cases he would be tamei, because that would be, he's eaten a kazayas, or kabet, not a kazayas, a kabetza, from a niblas oik tahor. All those are considered part of the nevela, because all of those are food, and therefore it makes him tamei. So the question is, man tana min ashol shol beitzim tahor, which tana would it be that says that if a person is eating from this cluster of eggs, meaning the eggs themselves that are developing inside the chicken, and still have the veins and whatever on them, we're saying that he's tahor, am Rabbi Yosef, to like Rabbi Yaakov. So Rabbi Yosef says that must not be like Rabbi Yaakov. De'ikir Rabbi Yaakov, ha'amayim ha'yim ma'uris begidin asu. We just said before that Rabbi Yaakov says that if the eggs still have the veins all over their surface, so they're still at that stage of development, then and you find them inside the chicken, then you're also to eat them with milk, because they're still considered part of the meat of the chicken. Well, if they're considered part of the meat of the chicken, then if you eat them from a chicken that's dead, from a nevela, then it should make you tummy. The same way as if you eat any other meat from the chicken. Amalei Abaye says to him, why? Says who? Maybe Rabbi Yaakov is only talking about it as far as the Isra, Bas B'Cholav. He doesn't want to consider these eggs yet to be like eggs. He still considers them meat. Avala Inyan Truma Loi, but maybe Truma is a different thing. Maybe he doesn't hold that they're considered meat relative to Truma. So you might ask, okay, well that's fine. Maybe Midaraita wouldn't be considered part of the meat, but maybe Midrabanan we should make a Zera. In order to because you might confuse it with meat, the same way as we're saying that you can't eat it with milk, the same way we should make a gzera that it's considered meat for this purpose of tumah. You can't do that. Apushi tumahu. That would be bringing about more tumah. Apushi tumah midrabanan loy mapshinan, and we do not midrabanan make more tumah. If you were to consider these eggs to be meat, full fledged meat, to the extent that a person who eats them becomes tameh because the bird is an nevela, then you'd be causing an extra case of him becoming tameh, and you don't want to do that. Now, Rashi asked the obvious question, what are we talking about? We had a whole sugi at the beginning of Shabbos about 18 cases, about 18 gzeiros that the Chachamim made, which most of them have to do with Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara. Some of them are things that, the whole concept of yodayim, of a person's hands, for example, being tameh, is d'rabbanan, and that's an example of a pushi tumah. Rashi says the difference is that Rashi just says that you as much as possible you don't want to add more cases of tumah. Yes, sometimes you have to because people might be confused or whatever, or because of the different reasons that we talked about them. But you don't just want to do it willy nilly. Other mafarshim also point out, other rishonim point out, the difference is this whole concept of nivlas of tahor is a unique kind of tumah. This is the only case, again, where midaraisa, a person can become tameh by eating something and not by touching it. So therefore, because it's such an unusual case, the Chachamim did not want to extend it any further than it is minasara.
From a nevela of enough kasher, you can't tameh if you eat it.
Right.
And a nevela of enough treif, you eat it, you don't.
Right. So it is unusual, yeah. But so because of that, so that's one reason why the Chachamim didn't want to extend didn't want to make exegesis about it. That's one version. V'ikat Amri, others have a different version. Man tana min eshkol shol beitzim tamei. Which tana would it be that said again? This Braisa made a distinction between the sholol shol beitzim, which is the eggs themselves in their various stages of development, and the eshkol shol beitzim, which is the actual ovaries of the chicken. The actual organs where the chicken where the eggs start developing.
Are the actual eggs,
and eshkol shel beitzim is the ovaries.
Yeah.
Here you can see pictures over here. The sholol shel beitzim is the eggs as they're growing inside the ovaries. The eshkol shel beitzim is the ovaries themselves. These are where the eggs start growing inside those. Yeah.
How many ovaries do they have?
No idea. I've never counted. So, according to the second version, we're asking Faket, Man Tana Mina Eshkol Shel Beitzim Tamei, which Tana would it be that says that if you eat from the ovaries, that you become Tamei? Amar Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yaakov. So here, in the second version, Rabbi Yosef is saying that must be according to Rabbi Yaakov. Da'amim Hayim Ma'uris Begidin Asuris. Again, Rabbi Yaakov had said that if the eggs still have veins on them, then they're also to eat with milk, which they're considered meat, which at this point, actually, in this Ikka Da'amri, the Gemara's understanding now, Rabbi Yosef's understanding, is that the word eshkol and sholol have a slightly different meaning than we said before. Before we said sholol shel beitzim means the eggs and eshkol means the ovaries. Here now, Rabbi Yosef thinks that the word eshkol means the actual eggs themselves, what we called before sholol, And shawl would mean the ones that are almost mature, would mean the eggs that are like a day or two away from being laid. They already have they already have the shell is about to develop on them. The eggs first develop, first the yolk, then the white, then the shell, or then the shell develops soft and then it hardens. So they're here. They're about to develop that. They're about to develop that shell.
So this is all assuming going with saying that a chicken is meat, not what the originally was, that it was only meat that was meat.
Well, that's a different matter. That's true. In Cholin, it does talk about the question of whether possible chol of min haTorah applies to birds or not. There's no question. It applies nowadays. I mean, we have the day of Rabbi Yitzchak Lili, who says that you're allowed to eat the meat of the meat of a bird together with milk. We learned about it at Shabbos. But everybody else disagrees with him. There is a machlokes whether it's midrashim or midrabanan. I think the general consensus is it's midrabanan because b'chalev imoy and you know, it has to be lo tivashav di b'chalev imoy and birds don't have mother's milk. But in this case, when Rabbi Yaakov is saying that you're not allowed to eat the egg, this partially developed egg in milk, right? Obviously, then according to that, it would be midrabanan. But now, no. So according to the second version, when we say mina eshkel shel beitzim, Rabbi Yosef thinks that mina eshkel shel beitzim means the eggs themselves, not the ovaries. So then, in that case, he says this part of the braisa must be according to Rabbi Yaakov. Rabbi Yaakov is the only one who says that the partially developed eggs are considered meat. According to the Chachamim, they would be fine to eat with milk, and therefore they wouldn't be considered meat. And again, according to this version, Amalei Abayi, Mimai de Eshkel, Mahanach Talia be Eshkel, who says that the word Eshkel means the eggs that are hanging off the Eshkel, Dilma Eshkel Gufe, maybe it's the Eshkel, the ovaries themselves. V'chitema Eshkel Gufe Maila Memra, and then you might ask, well, then what does the Braisa even need to mention the Eshkel, the ovaries for? Of course, they're part of the muscles or whatever it is of the chicken. The answer is to have a cook of ayin, because you would say that the braisa had mentioned three things together: the ovaries, the pupik, and the gizzard and the intestines. Which all of those, the afagav the boston ninu, even though all of those are meat, there's no question about it. Kiven de ikka inshi deloy achli, but since there are some people who don't eat the gizzard and don't eat the intestines, and we don't nowadays. So it's jachash menon. So therefore, the braisa had to tell us that nevertheless, even though some people don't eat those, they're still considered meat because people who are less finicky would eat them, and therefore they count towards the tabesa for to be matame the person. So the same thing, hachanami, the same thing as far as the ovaries, kibin de ikka inchi, the loy achli, since there are people who wouldn't eat them, it's jachash menon. So therefore, the braisa would have to tell us. So you can't prove from that the word eshko is referring to the eggs themselves. It could have to be referring to the ovaries. And the chiddush is that even though not everybody eats them, they're still considered meat for this purpose, because some people do eat them. As opposed to that, we wouldn't have a proof one way or the other as far as the eggs. The eggs, we would have to go back to our original assumption that the eggs are called shalal shabnitzim, and we said those don't count towards the meat. In which case, either according to Rabbi Yosef, that wouldn't be like Rabbi Yaakov, and according to Abaya, no, you can't necessarily compare the dinim of basa v'chalav to the dinim of tumah. Tanarabanan, the Gemara says, we learn in a braisa, kol shetashmishe b'yoyim nolad b'yoyim. Any creatures that mate by day give birth by day. Kol shetashmishe b'layla nolad b'layla. This is actually a quotation from a Gemara in Bechoros. The Gemara in the first parak of Bechoros has a whole sugya that discusses all kinds of facts about the natural world, about the lengths of pregnancies of various kinds of creatures, the positions in which they mate. The times when they mate and when they give birth, etc. It's a whole discussion over there. There also you have the famous story about the snake being pregnant for 7 years, and the whole story is Rabbi Yisroel ben Chananya and the case there. Yeah. So this is quoting from that. So any creature that mates by day gives birth by day. Kol shetashmishe b'layla nolad b'layla. Any creature that mates only by night gives birth only at night. Kol shetashmishe bein b'yom u'bein b'layla. Any creature that mates both by day and by night, know that bein b'yom u'bein b'layla, that it can give birth either by day or by night. What are some examples? Kol shetashmishe b'yom nolad b'yom zutana gerlas. One that mates only by day and it gives birth only by day. That an example is a chicken. A chicken always lays eggs by day. We'll talk about in a minute what the relevance of that is for our Gemara. Kol shetashmishe b'layla nolad b'layla. Any creature that mates by night gives birth by night. Zerat aleph. An example of that is a bat. Bats are nighttime, they're nocturnal creatures. During the day they sleep. So the time when they're active and when they mate is by night, and therefore they give birth by night. Any creature that has relations both by day and by night can give birth by day and by night. Adam b'chol d'domilei, that includes human beings and any other similar creatures. Omamar, so with the bride that's kol shetashmisha b'yom nela b'yom zutana gerlis, that any creature that mates only by day gives birth only by day. An example of chicken. L'may nakamina, what's the relevance of us to know that? L'chidur Rav Mori, b'rei Rav Kahana. This helps us with what Rav Mori, b'rei Rav Kahana said. The omer Rav Mori, b'rei Rav Kahana. Bodak b'kina shatana gerlim b'erev yamtiv. A person checked the nest, the hen's nest, erev yamtiv, v'lay mata b'beitza, and he didn't find any egg in it. And the next day he woke up early in the morning. Early in the morning could even be Rashi says before Alois Shachar. And he finds an egg in it. Muteres. Then that egg is mutter. We don't have to worry that it was laid on Yom Tov.
Presumption that it was laid during the night.
No, that's the thing. It couldn't. That's the thing. If we had to be concerned that it was laid during the night, then it would be usher. It's Beis Shanol to be Yom Tov. It's the case of our Mishnah. The point is, in this case, we do not have to worry about that it was laid by night. Why? Because chickens only mate by day.
Right.
So therefore, necessarily, it must have been laid by day. Not early in the morning. It must have been laid. Erev Yom Tov. You checked Erev Yom Tov. You didn't find it. So that's the question. V'halad Bodak. So then you checked. You didn't see it there. Obviously, it wasn't laid Erev Yom Tov. First of all, Erev Bodak Yafa Yafa. First of all, not necessarily did you check so carefully. You looked around a little. You didn't notice an egg. You might have been hidden under straw or whatever. V'afpilu Bodak Yafa. And even if you did check thoroughly, there's a different reason why you can say it's mutter. Ema Yatsa Roba V'chazra Havoi. You could say that most of it came out of the chicken Erev Yom Tov. Then it went back in. The muscles contracted and it pulled it back in. V'chidur Rabbi Yochanan, and like Rabbi Yochanan said before, that's fine. If that happened, Erev Yom Tov, as long as most of the egg came out of Erev Yom Tov, then yes, when the egg is finally actually laid on Yom Tov, you're allowed to eat it, because once it was most of it came out, Erev Yom Tov, it's already considered to be laid.
As opposed to
rot. Right.
Even if it's then partially,
right.
It's still
the point is, because it's a given that chickens do not lay eggs at night, then we have to, even though it's a far-fetched thing to say that it came out and then went back in, now that doesn't happen very often, but it, at least it happens sometimes that the chicken should lay eggs by night. So far, we're saying is impossible. Like Mar says, Eini, is that really so? V'amar Rav Yosi ben Shaul Amar Rav, Rav Yosi ben Shaul says in the name of Rav, Bodak b'kina shatana gerlis me'erav yam, so if a person checked the chicken's nest erev yamtiv v'loy matzuba beitza and he didn't find an egg in it v'lomacha hishkum matzuba beitza and the next day he wakes up early again before alois hashachar and finds an egg. Now obviously again the point of saying that he woke up before alois hashachar is if he woke up later in the day and he finds the egg, then then there's reason to worry about it. May have been laid by day. May have been laid today. You didn't find it yesterday. There's no reason. We're not going to start assuming that maybe it came halfway out and then went back in. That's an unusual thing. Then you're going to have to assume it was tackled late on Yom Tov. You woke up before Alois HaShachar, then yes. So the next morning you woke up early and found an egg. He says, Asura. Then the egg is Asur. So how is that? We just established that eggs are only laid by day. The answer is Hasam B'Disafna.
Irrefutable presumption.
Yes. Yeah. The answer is Hasam B'Disafna Me'ara. That case where we're saying that the egg would be Osir is where the chicken warmed itself up on the ground. We mentioned yesterday that when a hen doesn't have a rooster around, then it rubs around and covers itself with dirt and whatever, and it stimulates itself to produce eggs that way. Now, there's various creatures in the world that do that, where the females are capable of producing
so it's
young
without,
yeah, basically non-fertilized eggs. So therefore, yes. Then so now those kind. I mean, the rolling around in the dirt, the chicken can do any time during the day. So therefore, the egg might well be laid at night as well.
So that means to say, our rule really
is only for fertilized eggs.
Only for fertilized
eggs. Right. So that's what the Gemara is going to get into now. Yeah. Incidentally, as far as this business of chickens rolling around in the dirt and getting filthy, I read recently an interesting and slightly disgusting story about this. One time, the Bris Kirov in Yerushalayim 100 years ago was the Rav Moshe Leib Diskin, the you may have heard of the Diskin Orphanage. He founded it, named for him. Anyway, one time his Rebbetzin is cleaning and getting a chicken ready for cooking, and he overhears her comment to her friend how disgusting this chicken is. It's full of lice, much more than the usual ones. So the Rav overhears it, and he asks her to bring him over the chicken. He takes a look and finds that the neck of it is broken. It's chafe. How did he know? He said, chickens b'chlal have lice because they roll around in the dirt. They get filthy. So, of course, you know, lice attach themselves to them. Usually, though, a chicken throws its head back, shakes itself up a little, and so most of the lice fall off. This chicken had a broken neck. It couldn't do that. That's why you saw that it has much more than normal.
Wow.
Yeah. There was chafe, yeah.
Because
it had a broken neck, but he only realized it because of his business with the lice, yeah.
Havanish was able to teach a brain surgeon how to do a complicated surgery that no one else knew because he learned Gemara.
There's a story also. I don't want to get too far off tangent. We could tell stories like this all night, but there's a story with the Rebbe Rashab and the Frida Kadeba, where when the Frida Kadeba was in his teens, there was a new discovery that rocked the world about how the brain works, that the front part of the brain has to do more with creative thinking and the back part has to do more with memories or something along those lines. So the Frida Kadeba is very excited about it. He goes to tell the Rebbe Rashab. The Rebbe Rashab goes over to the shelf. He pulls down a sefer, a Bichol of Chassidus from the Mittel Rebbe from 70 years earlier, and he opens it up and starts reading a passage where the Mittel Rebbe describes this very idea. There's a certain organ in the brain that has to do with memory, and therefore you put your head forward when you're trying to think, and you put your head backward when you're trying to remember. And they're exactly the same idea, in other words. And the Frida Kadeba says to him, "So what? So you're telling me then that our ancestor, the Mittel Rebbe, was a greater professor, a greater doctor than the doctors nowadays?" Yeah. And the Rebbe Rashab tells him no, but he saw Lamaila how it is in the Adam Elyon, in Adam Kadma, and in Adam Elyon, and therefore he realized that there has to be something like this down in physical man down here. Yeah, it's Dakobar Iso Barama, in short. Nu, say the same thing about Rav Mori's case then. How do you know that it's a fertilized egg? Maybe it's an unfertilized egg, and therefore it could have been laid by night. Why are you assuming that it could have come out halfway or more than halfway the day before, which is an unusual thing? And Rashi, by the way, points out that if with unfertilized eggs, with the Safna Me'ara, it's actually more likely for them to be laid by night. So therefore, if we have a choice between more likely to be laid by night versus the unlikely thing that it came out more out of the egg yesterday, we're going to have to assume it was laid by night.
So
yeah.
You have to qualify the bride.
Right.
Unless I see there a rooster.
The answer is with the ikazachabada. You're right. Where a Murray's case would only work if there's a rooster around. Question is, okay, still, even if there's a rooster around, maybe the hen wasn't interested in him. Maybe she just preferred to roll around the dirt. We know for a fact, we learn from our Rebbeim, wherever there's a rooster around, it's not going to stimulate itself with the ground. The hen will go looking for the rooster. And how far can the rooster be away and still the hen will go after him? And as long as the hen is able to hear the sound of the rooster during the daytime, which Rashi and Tosfos point out, during the daytime the sound doesn't carry as far. We learned in Yuma that by night the sound carries much further. But it's quieter, yeah. There's less noise around. We learned there was an interesting Gemara that we had in Yuma that during the daytime there's the noise of the sun soaring through the sky. And therefore, you don't hear as much. Therefore, sound doesn't travel as far. And there's also a story. There's a story in Sanhedrin related to the pasuk in Eicha Bocher Tivka Balayla that the Jewish people cry by night. That one time, Rabbi Gamliel overheard a woman crying at night over I think her son had died or something like that. And the sound traveled much further at night. And now at night, it sounds much more scary. So he also started crying along with her. So we see that the sound travels better by night. Yeah.
About how prayer is a lot more powerful at night because there's less energy.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's actually when we that Gemara in Yoma about the sun soaring through the sky. We learned at the time the Mefarshim who explained the deeper meaning of it is that during the daytime, with the sun shining on everything, people make the mistake of thinking that the sun, you know, that the sun is a god, the sun is in charge of things. You know, and that at night when there's no sun around, you realize more that the Eidosh runs the world. Anyway. So over here, as long as the hen is able to hear the sound of the rooster, then yeah, she'll go after him instead of just rolling around in the dirt. Over Rav Mari Ogad Shitin Bati, and in fact, Rav Mari one time paskined and allowed the egg on Yom Tov when the rooster was up to 60 houses away. That was still the voice. He figured out that the sound could still travel that far. However, the Gemara points out some qualifications. If there's a river in between, then the chicken's not going to be able to cross. So then you're back to the old thing that it might have been Safna Me'ara. But if there is a Mabra, meaning a bridge, then it can. The chicken, why did the chicken cross the bridge? Yeah. However, if all there is across the river is a rope, then it won't go across. In those times, you had sometimes for the purpose of workers, for example, to get quickly across the river, they just have like a rope stretched across with a couple of poles, there'd be like a narrow plank of wood and a rope there to hold onto as a handrail, and like you'd walk hand over hand as you know going along. Yeah. So then the chicken's not going to go across that. It's called Mitzra, yeah. So then it's not going to go across that. However, the Gemara says, "Have a Ovdav Abra Metzra." One time, a taka happened that a hen did cross such a Metzra to get to the rooster. So therefore, the bottom line is, as long as there's a reasonable chickens can only fly a couple of feet at a time. Yeah. The bottom line is, as long as the hen is somehow able to get to the rooster, or I think some of Farshim say the other way around, if the rooster is able to get to the hen, then we can assume that's a fertilized egg, and therefore you find it early in the morning on Yom Tov, then you can assume it was laid, then you can assume that it was Yotz of a Chazra the day before, rather than saying that it was laid by night, which if it was fertilized, it won't be laid by night. So the Gemara says, "Mamayo kimta b'dasafta me'ara." So what are you saying then? That Rav Mari's case is talking about when he's saying that it's mutter is, or rather that the case we said is osur, the case of Rav Yosef Ashtu ben Shaul Amar Rav is where there's no rooster and safna me'ara, that it just developed it on its own. Mayu ya bodak. Then what's the difference whether you checked before Yom Tov? Kila bodak nami. If you didn't check the nest also, you should have to assume it was born by night. The answer is kilo bodak emim esmal havoi. But if you didn't check the nest at all, then yeah, then already you can assume it was laid the day before. Then you don't have to be so machmir if you b'chlal didn't check.
Meaning if you did check the nest and it did.
If you did check the nest and you didn't find not a rooster. If you didn't find an egg, if you checked by night and you didn't find a rooster, you didn't find an egg by night, and the next morning you come and find an egg, and there's no rooster around for safna me'ara, you have to be concerned that it was laid by night. But if you b'chlal didn't check before Yom Tov, then you can assume it was probably laid the day before, and you just didn't find it. Okay, but then even if you did check, why don't we allow for this Yotza Rubba V'Chazra thing? That maybe it partially laid it the day before, and then pulled it back in, and now it laid it again. V'Chidur Rabbi Yochanan, and like Rabbi Yochanan says, that such a thing can happen, and the egg is mutter in that case. The answer is Rabbi Yochanan lo shchiach. That kind of case of Rabbi Yochanan is not very common.
It goes out and back.
So again, if there's a rooster around, there's no choice. You can't say that it was laid by night because it never gets laid by night. As a fertilized egg never gets laid by night. So therefore, if you didn't see one there the day before and then you find one there early the next morning, there's no choice but to say that it must have been Yotz of a Chazra. But if it's safna me'ara, if there's no rooster around, then rather than supposing it's this rare case where Yotz of a Chazra, more likely to assume that it was laid by night and therefore would be osur.
That would only be
yeah, right. If you came later in the day and found it, then you have then even if there's a rooster around, it would be osur because it might have been laid that day. Since we mentioned something that Rabbi Yosi ben Shaul said in the name of Rav, the Gemara quotes another thing from him. Amar Rabbi Yosi ben Shaul Amar Rav, Hai Tumah Shchita, ground up garlic, Sakanta Legiluya is dangerous if it's uncovered. We learned in Sukkah, it's a commonplace thing throughout Shas, that water or other liquids that are left uncovered are also because snakes might have drunk from them and injected poison into them. We learned about in Sukkah, for example, that's why when you have the water for Nisuch HaMayim, if it became uncovered, you can't use it for Nisuch HaMayim, so you have to spill it out and take water from the Kiyar instead. So here, Rabbi Yosi ben Shaul is saying that the same thing is true as far as crushed garlic, that also it's something that might be attractive to a snake, and then it might.
Why didn't you mention it over there?
Because we didn't have a reason to mention it over there. There we were talking about water, not garlic.
We're talking about only relevant things. You can go on even more tangents than that, but
right. I mean, the main sugya about gilui, about what's dangerous because of gilui, is in the Gemara, if I remember correctly, in Cholin. I mean, here we're just mentioning it again because we mentioned one din from Rabbi Yosi ben Shaul, and perhaps we're mentioning another one.
Whatever it rings, it has injection poison.
It doesn't have to, but it might. Okay, so that finishes the sugya about the egg, about Beitza Shanel the Yomtov, and now on to the next thing from the Mishnah. We said the second machlokas for Shama Batil was Bishama Aaron Sa'ur Bekazayas, that the Bishama had said there's a difference between the shear for Sa'ur versus for Chometz, that Sa'ur, sourdough, the shear for it is a Kazayas on Pesach, and Chometz, regular Chometz, is Kakasevis, the size of a date, which is larger. My time out of Bishama, I think I asked what's Bishama's reason. They say because if you're going to say that the shear for them is the same thing for sa'ar and for chometz, lichter rachmana chometz v'leibari sa'ar, then the Torah only has to write that you're not allowed to have chometz. Automatically, we would know you can't have sa'ar v'ano amina, because we would say as follows: we make a kavah chomer u'ma chometz she'en chimusha kotza she'en chimutzik kasha b'kazayis, chometz where the chimutz of it is not so strong, it's not capable of making something else chometz, and already the Torah is saying it's also by kazayis sa'ar she'chimutzik kasha like hoshekin. It's sa'ur, which the chimutz of it is much stronger. It's capable of making something else chometz. How much more so? So, therefore, sa'ur de kasev rachman alamli. So, why does the Torah have to write the word sa'ur? Loimalach shi'ura shalzeh, like a shi'ura shalzeh. To tell you that the shi'urim of the two things are different. So Rashi points out, and Tosfos discusses also, that you can't just say that it'll write chometz, you'll learn sa'ur from it, and then we'll also know that sa'ur is a larger amount. You can't do that. We have a rule when it comes to a kavah chomer. We have a rule: da'yo levomen adin lias kenadin. That when you're trying to learn one case from another via a kavah chomer, you can't make the thing you're learning stronger than the one you're learning from. So yes, if it only said chometz, we would know sa'ur from it, because chometz kasha, but we wouldn't know it's a larger size. So therefore, the Torah actually has to spell out the word sa'ur to tell us that it has a different shear. And then how do we know that it's a different, that, or how do we know then in that case that it's the size of a date? And we learned in Yoma that that's the size that if a person eats it, it makes them feel better, so therefore we can assume that that's the shear. Rashi has two different explanations of how we get that shear. One is that we figure it out based on an analogy with the dinim of Yom Kippur, and the other one is simply Allah Moshe Mishinai. That it would be a kakasevis according to Bishrami. Some other mepharshim also point out that actually there is reason to compare it with Yom Kippur. Both Yom Kippur and both eating on Yom Kippur and eating chametz on Pesach are both chayav karis. So the logical reason to assume that there's a similar shear. So what would Bishilol answer to that? Tzuchi, they would say the Torah does need to write both chometz and sa'ur. The ikos rachmana sa'ur, because if it had only said you're not allowed to have sa'ur, hava minim mishum dechemul tekasha, then you would say, you know, you're not allowed to have sa'ur, because the chometzness of it is very strong. Aber chometz dein chemul tekasha, but regular chometz, a piece of bread, where the chometzness of it is not so strong, it's not capable of making something else chometz. Emaloi, so maybe not. Tzuchi, so therefore the Torah has to write the word chometz. On the other hand, because of Rachmana Chometz, but if the turtle only said Chometz, then you would say, Mishum the Roy Lachila. You know why the turtle would be saying you're not allowed to eat to have Chometz around on Pesach? Would be because you're able to eat it. I will say, Osha and Roy Lachila. Sourdough you can't eat. It's only meant as a starter for other dough. Aim a light. So you would think, maybe not. Maybe the turtle doesn't mind if you have sour around. Tzuchah. So therefore, you need both.
Well, why can't you, Shammai could say this every evening. Sour is also not Roy Lachila.
So some of Farshim explain that the point is that Beit Hillel is taking the view that there's two different ways of looking at it. We're talking over here about the Isser of Bal Yiro or Bal Yomatzeh. Actually, at this point, really, we don't know that yet. Actually, at this point, the Gemara thinks we're talking about the issur of eating. So Beis Shammai would say, you're right, Sa'ur is not as edible, therefore you need a larger amount. Beis Hillel would say that no, the Torah, you can't say that the Torah is mentioning Sa'ur separately because it has a different amount. Okay, the Torah is mentioning Sa'ur separately, because otherwise you think you're not paying for it at all.
It's still not edible, according to both.
It's edible. It's not normally edible. It's not nipsol me'achilas kelev. It's not like even a dog would eat it. They don't normally eat it, but it is edible. So Beis Hillel argues that that's why the Torah has to mention it. Whereas Beis Shammai would say the Torah is mentioning it in order to tell us it's a larger shear. Question is, Beis Shammai less the Rudin of Zera. Don't Beis Shammai agree with what Reb Zera says? Reb Zera is long after Beis Shammai, but he's quoting a pasuk, Pasuk hakasa b'sa'ur b'siyam b'chomet. The Torah starts off by saying sa'ur and finishes off chomet. The pasuk over here on the side. Shivas yamim sa'ur lo yimotzim v'teichem. For 7 days you're not allowed to have sa'ur found in your house. Kiko ocha machmeses, because anybody who eats machmeses, meaning anything that's chomet, then they'll get taris. So the Torah is starting with sa'ur and then continuing with chomet. What's the point? Loi malach, zeru sa'ur, zeru chametz, to tell you that sa'ur and chametz are the same thing, as far as the din of eating them, and they're not different. So the same kazayis would apply to both of them.
Right.
Well, the Torah says achila unless specified otherwise, it means a kazayis. So yeah.
Right. So you don't need the second.
No, you don't need. But how can Beis Shammai therefore say that there's a larger shiur for sa'ur? L'inyan achila, you're right. The Gemara says l'inyan achila kol amalei pligi. When it comes to eating, they don't disagree. They do. Even Beis Shammai agrees that the shiur for eating sa'ur is also a kazayis. Ki pligi l'inyan beer. The machloekas is as far as the inyan of beer, as far as bayura or bayamase. Do you have a mitzvah to be mevayer a smaller amount of sa'ur? Well, maybe not. And then you're oiran bayura bayamase if you don't. Beis Shammai savri lo yochen and beer machila. Beis Shammai says you don't learn beer from eating. There could be a different shear for eating that you chayev karis for eating versus what you'd be chayev on bayirah bayamatzeh for having around. Or Beis Hillel savri yochen and beer machila, and Beis Hillel says you would. Because in fact, some of the Farshim say the logic of Beis Hillel is the very fact. Why does the Torah say bayirah bayamatzeh? Because you might eat it. So therefore, there's a reason to say that they're the same thing, whereas Beis Shammai would say not. It's two different things. The Torah is saying don't eat it, and uniquely by chametz, unlike every other issur Shabbat Torah, the Torah is also saying bayura or bayamata.
Therefore,
it can have two different shiurim.
Doesn't
agree with that. Itmanami, it said also, Amar Rav Yosef Chanina, machloikas l'inyan beer. This machloikas is only as far as getting rid of it before Pesach. Avol inyan achilu dib akol zeb zeb kazayis. But when it comes to eating it, everybody agrees to kazayis. Tani nami hachin, we learn similarly in a braisa. When the pasuk says, v'lo yura l'chol sa'ur, v'lo yura l'chol chametz, which should be the other way around, whatever. Zo machloikas shivin v'shamay v'silol. That, about v'yura v'yamatzah, not about eating, is the machloikas v'shamay v'silol. So v'shamay v'sar v'chazayis v'chametz v'kakasevis. So v'shamay says that it's the size of a kakasevis, a date for a kazayis of sa'ur or a kasevis of chametz. V'silol v'zev v'zev v'kazayis. V'silol says a kazayis for both. The Shagas Arya, by the way, points out about this that we see that he says like this: when we talk about being over on Bayura Bayamata, can a person get Malkus for it? On the face of it, no. We talk about this briefly in the Mishnah. On the face of it, no. Bayura Bayamata is a passive thing. You left chametz in your house. You don't get Malkus for such a thing. According to the Rambam, you could get Malkus for it if, for example, you actually bought chametz during Pesach and kept it in your house. But according to many other Rishonim, no, there's no malchus for bayur al bayamata. So what are we talking about then? Are we talking about then what you're also to have around? Usually, we learned in Yuma that usually with most things that are also in the Torah, usually even a chassi shir is also. You just don't get punished for it. For example, eating on Yom Kippur, you're only over if you eat a kakasevet. If you eat a half a kakasevet, it's still also, but you don't get malchus. You don't get kares rather for it. So the same thing over here then. When we're talking about bayura al bayamata, if there is no actual penalty involved, there's no karis for bayura al bayamata, there's only karis for eating. And we're saying that, and we're saying there's a minimum size though to be over on bayura al bayamata. The implication, Shagas Arya says that actually if you have less than that amount, a kazayas or a kazayas, as the case may be, you're actually not over on bayura al bayamata. Not all the acronym.
Yeah,
No, a lot of our opponents disagree with him on that. I mean, we try to get rid of every possible piece of chametz. But it is true, for example, that only if you find a kazayas of chametz, let's say, for example, you did bedikas chametz, and then you find more chametz during Pesach, only if you find a kazayas do you actually make a bracha when you burn it, when you destroy it. Otherwise, not. You want? Mishnah had said, "Ashechet chayev ofer yamtiv v'cholov." A person, the next machlokus in the Mishnah was about shechting a wild animal or a bird on yamtiv, where you have a machlokus. What do you do as far as kisei adam? But Shammai said, "Go ahead and dig with a spade and get dirt to cover the blood." And Vasilov says, "Don't shecht unless you have dirt already ready." It sounds like when the Mishnah is starting off Hashoichet, if a person shecht it, then what should he do? It sounds like we're talking about Vidyevin, but not Machatchila. Ema Sefer, but look at the next part, or Vasil Omim Lo Yishchot, that Vasil is saying don't shecht unless you have dirt available. We call the Tanakama Saba Yishchot, which means that the Tanakama, Vishama in this case, says you can go ahead and shecht Machatchila. Thanks. So what is it? Is it Hashoichet that even Beit Shammai agrees that Chachila you shouldn't shecht unless you have dirt? Or is it only Beit Hillel says that, but lo yishchot, you shouldn't be shechting at all? But Beit Shammai, it seems to be implying, go ahead and shecht, even if you don't have ready-made dirt. The answer is halei kasha, lo yishchot v'yichas kama. We don't mean that you shouldn't shecht at all. We mean that you shouldn't shecht and cover the blood. You may shecht according to Beit Shammai, but still according to them, if you don't have ready made dirt, don't cover the blood. Well, it says Ema Sefer, but look at the next part. Moedim Shem Shachat, that Beit Hillel agrees that if you shechted sheyachba b'derko v'chasa, that you should go ahead dig with a shovel and cover the blood. Which implies that the beginning is not b'dyevid. What are we saying? That if you already shechted without having blood, that even Beit Hillel will agree, go ahead and dig. Which means the earlier part of the mission, the machlokas b'shama b'tzilul, is the hatchila. Are you allowed to shecht when you don't have blood, when you don't have dirt available? According to b'shama, yes. According to b'tzilul, no. Right. So that's the question. Why is the mission starting off hashelchet chayev oif b'yamtiv, which implies we're talking about somebody who already shechted, and what should he do? According to b'shama, there's no already. You hatchila. You're allowed to shecht. The Mishnah should have presented it something like Vishama Omim shechet chay shechet adam chayev oif b'yamtiv u'machas es adam or v'tzilulim lo yishchet, etc. What the Mishnah means is Hashoichet Shabali Molech. If a Shoichet comes to ask advice from the Rav, he's not sure. He doesn't have dirt available, so he wants to ask. Should he shecht? Kaseh Omelo. What should the Rav tell him? Veshama Omim Omelo Shchot Chafor V'Kase. So Veshama will tell him that the Rav will tell him go ahead shecht and then dig and cover the blood. Unless you have dirt available from beforehand. So we're not talking about, you're right, we're not talking about he already shechted, because then even Vasilov agrees that you have to cover the blood. What we're talking about is Hashoichet, because he's coming to shech, and he wants to know what should he do. So Hashoichet Shabali Malach, Hashoichet does not mean if he already shechted, it means a shechet who wants to know what to do. Rabbi Yosef says a little different. Rabbi Yosef says a little differently. This is what the Mishnah means to say. Hashoichet shebali malach keted oimeloi. If Hashoichet comes to ask advice, comes to ask a shayla, what should the Rav tell him? The Rav will tell him, go dig, then shech, then cover, which the difference is, Rabbi was saying first shech, then dig. Rabbi Yosef's version is they would tell him, first dig, then shecht. Or Vasilov would say, don't shecht unless you had dirt already ready. Amalei Abayla Rabbi Yosef, Sabai asked Rabbi Yosef, Lema ma'a rabba b'di rab zeyra, amal rab, kamuf l'gisu. Do we have to say that you and Rabba are arguing in what Rabbi Zeyra said in the name of Rab? When you're shechting a bird or a wild animal, you have to have dirt below the blood and above it. We see nowadays, you know, by kaparis, for example, they always make sure there's a pile of sawdust there that they shecht onto, and then they cover it with more. Shenemar, the pasuk says, v'shafachas domei v'chisahu be'ofer. He should pour out blood from the bird or the animal, v'chisahu be'ofer, and cover it with dirt. Offer le'nemar, it doesn't say he should cover it dirt, which would just mean there has to be dirt on the top, ela be'ofer, but in dirt. Which means, so that's dirt both below and above. First of all, because be'ofer means like it's completely encased in the dirt. And second of all, the Tosfos Chachmei Anglia says an interesting thing. Be'ofer, we can break it down into Be'ez Ofer, two sets of dirt, one on top, one on bottom. So you're going to say, Demar Isle de Rabzeira v'Rabbel Isle de Rabzeira. So Abaya is asking Rabbi Yosef, does that mean you hold like Rabzeira and Rabba doesn't? Because you're saying you have to dig first, implying you have to have loose dirt first in order to shecht on top of, and then you'll use more dirt to cover it. Whereas according to Rabbi, you don't need to dig first, because evidently, according to him, you only need dirt on the top. Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef tells him no. Bein l'didi, bein l'Rabba Islam de Rabzeira. Both I and Rabba agree with what Rabzeira said. B'hocha b'hocha mefliginin. Our machlikus rather is as follows. Rabba sover I ika of lamata ein I loy loy. Rabba says, if you already have ready-made loose dirt there available to shecht on, then good. Then go ahead and shecht. If not, then not. Why? Rabba is going to say you don't allow him to dig before he shechts. Because then he might change his mind and not end up shechting. Then he's dug in the ground for no purpose. Now we will learn tomorrow that the kind of digging that we're talking about over here is only also midrabanan. If it was also midraraisa, of course you can't do it on Yom Tov, because that's not malachas eichel nefesh. But even so, you're only doing it for the purpose of shchita. If you're not going to end up shechting, then the chum don't want you to go digging. So therefore, Rabba is concerned that if you first shecht and only then do you start digging around for dirt, then you might change your mind and not shecht at all. Or rather, if you dig first in order to get the dirt on bottom to get ready to shecht, then you might change your mind. According to Rabbi Yosef, on the contrary, it's better to not make such a gzera. The ilay sharis, because if you don't allow him to shecht in that case, he might come to hold back from simchas yomtiv. He won't end up shechting the animal, and he won't have meat for yomtiv. So better, you should make it as easy as possible for him to be able to shecht the animal. And if that means that you're going to allow him to dig first and only then shecht, then let him do it.
Not really be over.
I mean, he is allowed to dig. Rabbi Yosef is not worried that he might change his mind and end up not shechting, because we don't want to make such a gzera, because then he might say, you know what, forget about it. I won't bother shechting at all.
But you can prepare over the earth and it's fine.
Oh, if he prepares it for Yom Tov, that would be best.
Yeah. He said he had to prepare the dig and all things. Oh, he had to
full that came
shechting.
That may also be.
Yeah.